When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Don't worry, Daddy. I'll make you famous again.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Underrated Podcast. This is a podcast that discusses underrated films, underappreciated films, and the ones that have slipped under the radar and passed most people by. I am your host, Derek McDuff, and right now we're doing a thing where we're having a few guest co-hosts come by, and today is someone that I've kind of mentioned before on the podcast a couple times, not by name, but I've mentioned someone who is my quote-unquote movie friend, who I talk to about movies. And that is my good friend Marion. How's it going, Marion?
Hello! I just waved on a audio medium.
So, thank you for coming on. You are not a podcaster.
Nope.
But you are someone who knows a shit ton about movies and who I've had many, many good movie discussions with. And, you know, I've been having a lot of fun doing all these different guest co-hosts, so I wanted to have you on, so thank you for coming on and bringing some unique insights.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, and so we'll get to the film that we're going to be discussing today. I sent you a list of movies that I might want to talk about, and you picked Sinister, the 2016 Scott Derrickson directed film. Why was it that you chose this movie?
For a number of reasons. One, I really like horror, and so I thought this was a pretty good horror movie. Two, Ethan Hawke spends the entire movie in cozy sweaters, and that's just fucking fantastic. And three, I just really enjoyed the film when I first saw it in theaters back in 2016, apparently.
That's, I need to double check myself on that. I usually have my notes up.
No, I think you're probably right. I just feel fucking old right now.
Right? Oh my god. 2012. Oh my god. 2012.
How dare you, Derek?
I think 2016 might be Sinister 2.
This was released in 2016 in some theater.
Yeah, sure. There was some kind of revival around Halloween.
Yeah, you know how it is.
I'm sure. Yeah. But yeah, no. I also obviously really love this movie. I'm much less of a horror person than you, but I still really like certain horror films. And I think the ones that I tend to gravitate towards more are the ones that are all about the kind of spooky vibes. Movies that make you feel... I feel like a lot of the horror films that made me, for at least a little while, dislike the genre are ones that are like more about jump scares. Mm. It's more about surprise than putting you in this really anxious attitude. And I think that's becoming more and more prevalent with, you know, this was made obviously by Blumhouse. A24 is really famous for that. We just had both seen Talk to Me recently, and I know that's something, you know, we both enjoyed the film to varying extents. And I think that's becoming more and more prevalent as horror kind of evolves. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think for the most part, you're right. I mean, it started with, like, Paranormal Activity becoming such a huge sort of moment in cinema history, because that movie cost, like, $2,000 to make.
Yeah.
And it made so much fucking money basically on word of mouth alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a very much a vibes thing, because it's literally just a lady standing on over her husband on a fucking webcam for, like, 3 hours. You know, and then something spooky happens at the end. So it's sort of, since that, people have realized that horror has a lot of interesting ideas you can very easily explore for not a lot of money, which is why, you know, the Purge movies happened and a ton of other things. So it's just sort of evolved as a genre, honestly, going back to Blair Witch.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess I kind of agree with you. I mean, I love all horror equally, including the really shitty ones, because, you know, as bad of a day as you're having, at least you don't got, like, a Jason Voorhees problem, you know? But,
Right.
Yeah, yet. But, yeah, I agree with you, and especially with the prevalence of A24 horror movies, it's they've really sort of taken the ball and run with it genre-wise.
Yeah, and that's not to say I, like, really dislike other horror films. They just don't really get me, like, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, Jason Takes Manhattan. Not scary, but it's a lot of fun. Not a good movie, but hey, I had a good time watching it.
I kind of disagree with you on the fun on that one. Maybe it's just... It's very boring
maybe,
to me.
Maybe it was just nostalgia, you know, that one was always on the Sci-Fi Channel.
I do like when they do, like, the Friday the 13th marathons, and you randomly turn it on, and you realize it's Friday the 13th part, like, 7, and you're just like, Jesus, how many of these are there?
Also, strangely, not one for a while. Like, I think the rights are all weirdly tied up or whatever.
Yeah.
But now A24 is going to make, like, a prequel or something, I think.
To Talk to Me?
To, Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah, the TV show done by, what's his name, Brian Fuller?
Yes, yeah. Which I'm excited for.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Brian Fuller is an interesting TV guy.
Yeah.
He always stays with the show for, like, one season and then leaves.
Right, and that season is always incredible, like, some of the best TV ever.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen, American Gods, but
that's the same one that I've heard good things about season one. That's the one thing of his that I haven't seen. But yeah, but back to Sinister. I really love how this movie starts. That grainy 8mm footage, it just really puts you in the mindset of, like, this is what this movie is going to be.
Yeah,
and you know they return to it a number of times, and the reason I like this better than something like Skinamarink is, like, Skinamarink feels like it's that kind of creepy, disturbing vibes wall to wall.
Yeah.
But it, once, like, that's all it is, it kind of loses its effect when it's kind of just punctuated at certain points and you're building up to it, and it's these little bursts. It's really effective. And a lot of them are even shorter than I remember. Like, in my memory, it's like this Mandela effect I have on it's like, I remember that lawnmower scene, and I remember it being long. Like, I remember, like, seeing, like, a head getting cut up into pieces by the lawnmower. But the movie does such a good job of, like, showing you just the lead up to that and then Ethan Hawke's reaction.
Yeah.
It does. It's like the thing with, like, how in Castaway, people are convinced that they're like, oh, yeah, there used to be that scene where Tom Hanks tries to kill himself. And he just, like, references it. But they're like, no, it was in the theatrical, the one, it was in the VHS. But that scene, like, never existed. But the movie does such a good job of, like, telling you about that scene and putting it in your mind that you actually have a memory of it. And then when I watched it, not this time, but, like, about a year ago for Halloween, I was like, that's all that there is in the lawnmower scene?
Yeah, it kind of edges you with what happens to me. What happens to the family, if you will.
Yeah, sure. And, yeah, just, like, the silent stuff with the just really disturbing... grainy visuals and that score.
Yeah, which that is sort doing, of janky score that's like something hitting something, you know?
Yeah, it's incredibly unnerving, and it's so good.
What's your favorite of those 8mm films?
That's
for you know, using the word favorite, very.
Right, yeah. I think it's in my memory it's the lawnmower one, but like I said, it doesn't go as long as I think. But I think maybe that is what makes it so effective, is that it does such a good job of setting up and, like, establishing everything and making you feel just so unnerved that you're like, you, it's even better than, like, it's, you, it puts the memories in your head. It makes you do the work. And I think that's also just, like, the worst way to die.
Oh, yeah,
like,
by far.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the getting set on fire in a car one, just because that's a slow death, you know?
Except for the lawnmower, all of them are kind of slow. It's like drowning, slowly hanging, so those are all bad.
Well, the throat cutting, that's pretty quick.
That's true. That's
that's
true.
Nice, I guess. And the axe murder at the end.
Yeah, which...
Spoilers.
Well, again, no spoilers on this show. Which you don't see, you know? It's another thing of, like, you don't see... It's just, like, you don't even see... I'm really glad you don't see, like, you see Ethan Hawke tied up on the floor.
Right.
But you, and you see, like, his wife in the background and stuff.
Julie Rylands.
Mm-hmm. She related to Mark, by the way?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I saw
her in the credit.
Okay,
yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Because she hasn't really been in anything else.
She was in The Nick as one of the main characters in that. And she pops up every once in a while. She was just recently in something, and it'll come to me later. But, she's in things.
But, yeah, I'm really glad you don't have to see them,
That's one thing I actually really like about Sinister is Ethan Hawke is just an asshole. Like,
yes.
His character is
such
a dick. But, like, you know, he's still kind of compelling in this, like, he's sort of relatable because he wants to, You get mm-hmm. the wanting money for his family thing, but he's just, we're going to move into a murder house and I'm not going to tell anyone because I'm an asshole, you know? Like, yeah.
And slight spoilers for Talk to Me, but like, my favorite horror movies are the ones where the main character sucks a lot, but I also kind of relate to them.
All right.
And I don't want them to win. I want them to kind of be quote unquote punished or whatever at the end, but I still relate to them a lot. And I really relate to, like, Ethan Hawke. I'm like, wow, you suck, but, like, I understand him so well, being a writer, being someone who's like, oh, yeah, like, I'm a writer who doesn't really want to have a family and stuff like that, and who, you know, when he talks about, like, these books are my legacy, like, that's, if I had a wife and kids, I would also have trouble, probably, and that's why I don't want to have a family, because it's like, I would...
Because you don't want to have to be like, sorry, son, it's your birthday, but you're not my legacy.
Exactly, yeah. And, like, when he talks about, he's like, oh, I can't go write textbooks, or I can't go teach, or anything like that, like, he's like, because he's like, oh, I gotta provide for my family. It's multiple times, like, there are other ways for you to provide for your family. You are doing this because you want to relive your glory days. You're going back and rewatching, like, you getting interviewed by Pert Hapley or whatever. Like, so I really related to him, but in a way that I'm just like, these are the parts of myself that, like, I wouldn't, like, the road that I wouldn't want to go down, the parts of myself that maybe I don't like. And it's just kind of cathartic when you see, like, him just getting what he deserved, you know?
Yeah, no, I like that he's just an unrepentant asshole the entire movie. I also like that they kind of do a bait and switch with the kids, because you'd think it'd be the creepy sleepwalking one in America, but no, it's the daughter who paints on walls.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Once again, it's like one of these sons that, like, no one cares. He's like the kid, he's like the son in The Americans.
Yeah,
like,
he's the box sleeper. Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. Which is fucking weird, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of creepy, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, good. One thing, too, about the kids is, what I really like about this movie is that, and as opposed to like a slasher movie, is that Bagul himself isn't the one getting you.
Right.
He's like this spooky demonic force. It's not like you're gonna run away from him like he's Michael Myers or something, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh no, he corrupts someone around you and then you get killed by your own kid. That's so creepy.
I also like that the smart thing to do is the wrong thing to do. You know, leaving the creepy house is the wrong move.
Exactly.
I think that's a cool sort of twist on a, you know, well-known trope, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, okay, fine. He's finally, like, after, like, there's a million signs that he should leave and leave and leave and leave, and then it's, like, finally he takes the hint.
Yeah.
He gets out of Dodge, and kind of have that fake happy ending for a second.
And then you get that phone call from Ziggy Sabatka being like, dude, you should not have left the house. Oops.
Oops. And then, yeah, it all just, like, he drinks, like, a glow stick out of a cup, apparently. And
yeah, those kids always be poisoning you with glow sticks.
That's
how
it goes, you know?
Never drink predator blood, kids.
But you brought up Deputy So-and-So, as he's called in film, which I don't think he's actually ever given a name.
He's not. He's not even given a name in the sequel, which is really cool.
Okay. Yeah. Which did you ever watch the sequel?
I saw it when it came out in theaters, but my memory of it is very...
Okay.
It's interesting, because what I remember of it, which it's not streaming anywhere, otherwise I would have rewatched it, but... He shows up at someone's house who's having the bejewel problem, or whatever the guy's name is, and he's like, dude, you can't leave. I know this bad shit is happening to you, but you leave, you die. And so it's kind of him trying to deal with, like, that, but I can't remember how it ends or anything like that.
Okay. Does Vinny D also Skype someone?
I'm so sorry. I can't remember.
It's okay. Well, I mean... So I love this movie. I remember Scott Derrickson was originally going to do the sequel, but he didn't come back, so I kind of, like, lost interest.
Okay.
I think it's because he went to go do Doctor Strange in 2016. That came out in 2016. That's why I was thinking that.
There you go. Well, I'm going with the headcanon that this came out in 2016, so I'm not so old.
Right. Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm rewriting history.
We're not in our 30s.
No.
But I think that Deputy So-and-So is really great in this movie because I think you really need that break from the tension. You need that.
And James Ransom's always been really good at that. He kind of served the same purpose as being like a hapless screw up in The Wire, and like he does the same thing in It Chapter Two. He's very good at being in horror movies, or, you know, sort of very dramatic situations and breaking up the shit that it is.
Yeah, because you need to take a breath. Because it's like he always comes in after like the grainy, gnarly stuff, after like Ethan Hawke has been running around, there's like ghost children chasing him and he's got an axe, and you need to catch your breath. little bit. So I think he serves a very, and he's, like you said, he's so good.
He is.
He's hilarious. Like, you know, and he's kind of village idiot, but he's not like, he does make a point of like, he has a degree in criminology. He's not like,
he's
stupid.
Not someone you can easily dismiss because he is someone with a valid point. Like, I would not spend a night in the murder house when he says that, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, he's like, I believe in all of this. What are you doing, bro?
Yeah, he's a fantastic sort of foil to Ethan Hawke and while also, you know, not being overused, which is something easily to do in these type of movies.
Exactly. He doesn't come until about the 1/3 mark, you know?
Right. Like, he is in the beginning, you know, for a little bit, but he doesn't really become a character.
Yeah, yeah. So he's really well utilized.
Yes.
I think, this film has a pretty small cast, you know, like you said, like we said, Vinny D on the Skype.
Right,
you
the only two have, scenes.
Yeah, the two scenes.
He did not leave this house for this.
And I really like the way that the exposition is doled out with him. Like, it feels very natural.
Yeah.
And I also just, like, 100% my jam is the, like, spooky demonic cults in the modern day. Like, I really like that vibe. It's, like, almost like what, like, low fantasy where you've got, you know, like, fantasy in the modern age. This is like that, but like horror. It's like low horror, like, you know, something like Hereditary or like The Gate. Did you ever see that movie from like...
I did.
It's Stephen Dorff.
Yeah.
Like the 80s or whatever.
Okay, as one of Stephen Dorff's biggest fans, and you bet your ass I've seen
it. Of course. Stephen Dorff and James Badge Dale, you're leading the fan clubs.
Yeah, when Mahershala Ali was cast as Blade, I made a Stephen Dorff joke based on him being in the first Blade and also in True Detective Season 3, and then no one got it, and I felt sad.
It's okay, it's okay. It's like half the jokes I make on this show. Nobody gets them.
Fair. So there's two of us.
Yeah, there we go. But yeah, so, you know, we talked about how in Sinister 2, you know, it's probably, it doesn't really recapture this, but... One that I tried to rewatch over this pod before this podcast, and I just ran out of time because I'm packing and stuff like that. But did you see The Black Phone?
Well, I saw it last year, I think.
Okay, yeah, cause, I mean, it came out last year, and you know that's Scott Derrickson's kind of horror follow up to this,
right? His like return,
which he famously dropped out of doing Doctor Strange 2 due to that. And the reason I bring it up is because, you know, he talked about him wanting to do it because of like these childhood. You know, something he went through in his childhood. I wouldn't say traumas, you know, necessarily.
Let's hope it's not what happened to Black Phone.
Yeah. You know, that movie is famously written by Joe Hill, whose real name is Joe King, the son of Stephen King, who famously wrote The Shining about all the, you know, the stuff about being a dad and being a famous writer.
Mm-hmm.
And so that movie feels... So, you know, with knowing what we know about Joe Hill, knowing what we know about... And The Black Phone, about these two guys... It seems like, you know, maybe there's something there about, like, having this dad who is, he's more concerned with his own legacy, his creative process than being a dad. Because you kind of always hear about that from, like, Duncan Jones and people like you know, David Bowie's son and people like that who, they're like, yeah, my dad is great, everybody loves my dad, you know, and I love my dad, but there's maybe that disconnect there of, like, I wasn't as important in the work, and I think that's something that thematically comes through here. And a reason that I like this movie, it's one of my favorite horror films, is because there is a lot of meat on the bone. There is a lot of thematic substance here that is not just like, hey, this is a metaphor for grief. It's a lot in this, and the characters feel there's not very many characters, and a lot of them don't have very much screen time other than Ethan Hawke and his wife Juliet Rylance. But they do feel fully realized, like, real people.
They do. They're very well-written as characters. And most of the time in horror movies, you just sort of have one character trait per person. And they really don't. And it's refreshing. And she's not just, like, a nagging wife. She has interesting points and stuff. And, like, he's just an asshole, really, at the end of the day. Like, they're really well-developed, both of them. The kids, not so much, but they don't really need to be, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They're exactly, they're just kids in a horror movie, you know? Like,
and,
you know,
one's creepy, one's not.
Yeah.
But turns out to be.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even, like, the kids in, like, Jurassic Park, I don't think are, like, incredibly well written, you know? They're, like, one's a hacker and one likes dinosaurs, you know?
Yeah, you know? You get one character trait per kid.
But, yeah, like you said, the parents feel so real. Mm-hmm. And, like, one of the best scenes, I think, in the whole movie is not even... a scary scene at all, but it's when the two of them get in that big argument at the kind of beginning of the third act.
Yeah.
And you really get such a good sense of it, and you're just like, dude, you fucking suck so much. You need to, like, listen to everything. Like, everything she's saying is 100% right.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, yeah, so what? She had, like, and he's just trying to explain everything
right.
away.
Yeah.
And she's like, dude, you moved us into a fucking murder house, and you didn't tell me.
Right.
And he's like, oh, yeah, but you said you didn't want, and, like, he's just like, man, you suck. And you still, like, understand him, but, like, they both feel so, so real in that moment, and it feels like something out of a drama,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that has been part of this trend we were talking about of these horror movies making characters feel like they are actually in a drama or something like that, in a more, you know, I'm not trying to, like, rag on horror movies, but they are in something that feels deep and real, just like family kind of tragedy happening with them.
Yeah, for they kind of seem like, I don't know, you can't say, like, realistic, because realistically, mm-hmm. I don't think Bejeweled, I know he has an actual name.
Bagul.
Yeah, I don't think he actually exists in his 10 children and, you know, hilarious parent murderers, but, but, like, yeah, they do seem like people who would, real people in an extreme situation, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They're very well realized.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back to, you know, what we were talking about when Detective So-and-so sees him mm-hmm. so strung out, and he's, like, talking to him, and he brings up, you know, he's like, every time I see you, you've got a glass of whiskey. And that's something that the movie makes a point of, is, like, he's watching these horrible things, and his coping mechanism, instead of being like, hey, let me, you know, because he has that moment where he's like, maybe I should call the cops.
Yeah.
No, I've got to do this myself.
Right.
And he's, instead of, like, talking to his wife or whatever, he's just, like, throwing back a glass of whiskey.
Well, I mean, in part of his defense, you know, the sheriff at the beginning was like, you're an asshole, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
And, like, so I would have a moment where I'm like, should I call the cops? But then I'd realize I just watched a snuff film, so yes, I should. But,
I love that they punctuate it with the moment he just, like, looks at his book that ended up being a success.
Uh-huh.
And I just love that he's probably a shitty true crime writer. Like, he had one good book.
Right.
And then he had, like, a number of failures.
Where he just accused the wrong guy.
Yeah.
And stuff. Yeah. It hints that he, like, got the wrong guy, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Twice, it basically says. Which also, like, I kind of, like, I, you know, obviously there's, like, exceptions where there's, like, you know, hey, true crime has done some good stuff, you know, like, I think Zodiac's really good, you know, the whole Michelle McNamara helping to catch mm-hmm. the Golden State Killer. But I think, like, true crime documentaries and stuff like that are kind of exploitative, and, like, some of the true crime writers, I'm not saying everybody, like, can maybe take advantage of that, and mm-hmm. this is just being like, yeah, this guy, you know, that has that scene where it's like, they're like, what's much more important to you? The justice or the fame? And clearly he wants the fame, but he's like, oh, the justice.
Yeah, you're not going to be on national television being like, oh, I want the fame.
Yeah.
You know? You can't do that. Then the world will know you're an asshole. that's stuff you keep behind closed doors.
Yeah, but before we started, you kind of said that you thought maybe this movie should have ended 30 seconds earlier.
It doesn't need the jump scare at the end where Bejeweled, like, pops out and stares at you.
Honestly, I completely agree. That's the one moment when I'm like, this movie, it has one or two jump scares.
It does, yeah.
They don't feel cheap ever. They feel like, oh, a lot of times they're in, like, the background or something.
Right.
Like, when he, like, sees the dog and then there's just, like, four kids standing behind him, and you're like, whoa, you know.
That's sinister.
Yeah. Movie I did not love as much. Or, I was thinking of Insidious. Never mind.
Mm.
I always get those. Do you always do that? I always get Sinister and Insidious confused.
No, because Ethan Hawke and Patrick Wilson look nothing alike.
Well, they have similar names. They came out around the same time.
One's about a guy going to the Shadow Realm
yes.
because there's a weird, creepy demon thing. And then the other one's about a guy being a dick.
I know. Just the names throw me off,
you
know.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I agree completely. Like, if it ended, you know, just you didn't have that last, like, it felt like that was like a studio note or something. Like, you've got to have, like, because otherwise it just kind of, like, fades out and ends. And I feel like they're like, you got to leave them with something. It feels like such a horror trope that maybe we hadn't got over in 2012.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were also kind of trying to allude back to the Vincent D'Onofrio line about how, you know, the belief is that when he's represented in physical media that it is how you get haunted by it. So it's, you know, sort of trying to do that thing.
It's kind of breaking the fourth wall a little bit.
Yeah. But it just doesn't really work.
Yeah, I agree with it. It's like a good idea because it's like, oh, you know, when you watch these videos and it's, you know, this is nothing new. Like, The Ring obviously did it. But it is a really cool idea of, like, the whole meta, like, here's a guy watching these, basically, horror films, mm-hmm. and by watching the horror films, he gives them power and lets yeah. them into his life. We, as an audience, have now done that, and right. it's trying to punctuate it with that, but like you said, the execution of it...
It falls flat,
you know, it's a little, like, goofy Halloween costume, you right. know, just like... And because Bagul is never... He's never the scary thing. He's always... When you see him, like, crop through the background, you see him in, like, the water or something yeah. like that, he's not what's going to get you. He's going to make someone else get you.
It's the idea of the kids killing you that's more terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, they're children, right?
Yes.
No one expects to be murdered by a child.
Exactly. You're supposed to be these little golden wee baby, like, right. beacons of hope, yeah. you know?
But if you watch horror movies, like, 90% of the time, those assholes end up haunted, so why the fuck would you want No offense to people who have children. I'm right. sure yours are fine.
Yeah, yeah, yours are good as long as you're not, like, prioritizing your writing or right. whatever in front of it.
And also, maybe just every once in a while ask if they've been possessed recently.
Yeah. Also, that's part of the reason I ride the library. I go somewhere else other than my house because he is in this house and is writing about all this spooky shit and it's making him crazy. I mean, I don't think writing the top 10 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies is going to make me as crazy, but it's still good to have a secondary place to write.
But see, that's the problem, because Bejeweled will follow you home. You pick him up in the library and he hitchhikes home with you.
So
there.
It's the haunted library? It's like an yeah. evil spooky...
Have you checked to make sure your library's not haunted?
You know what? That's a good point. Next yeah. time I'm there...
Ask the librarian.
I'll be like, hey, is there any spooky ghosts or anything?
Right.
I am pretty sure that the bookstore I work at is haunted.
Okay.
You know, I mean, books will fall off shelves and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I've seen Ghostbusters. These things happen.
Well, yeah, that is a very well-known ghost phenomena. Mm-hmm. Have you seen any weird ooze?
Ooze?
Ooze. The Ghostbusters movies are chock full of ooze.
Oh, ooze, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles
yeah,
2.
Like O-O-Z,
the secret. Oh.
However the rest of you spell that word.
A lot of O's and a lot of Z's, and I think it ends yeah. with an E.
Right, I was going to get there eventually, yeah. but you yeah. know, I can add, I can't tell.
I have not seen any O's.
Well, then you
so
might be okay.
I think I'm good. I also have to ask you, was there any part of you that wanted to choose this movie because we have maybe differing opinions on Ethan Hawke, and you wanted me to watch an Ethan Hawke movie?
No, to be honest with you, my main thought about Ethan Hawke in this movie was his sweater. And I know you don't really like Ethan Hawke, and that's totally fair, but, like, I mean, this is not the best representation of him as an actor. It's him being the perfectly serviceable actor that he is.
Because like we said, we have differing opinions. You really mm-hmm. like Ethan Hawke. I think he kind of is a really great person and not a great actor. But I think that there are exceptions to that. And I think the exceptions are when he's kind of playing a guy who is maybe pseudo-intellectual, B, someone who's trying to seem like a nice guy, and C, is kind of a dick, which is why I think he's really good in the Before trilogy. And I actually think he's really good here. This is probably my favorite Ethan Hawke performance, if I'm being honest.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, spoken like someone who's not a big fan of Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
Well, actually, I've covered that on this podcast. That is...
So you're saying you like him as a shitty true crime writer more than sleazy space pimp?
Well, he's only like 15 minutes of that movie. When Rihanna becomes a main character, randomly.
I do like how you can remove the entire second act of that movie and it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, it's just like, why was this here? Okay, cool, yeah. Moving on. That right. is one of the most weirdly structured movies. I go into it on the whole episode. People can go back and listen to that Valerian episode if they want to hear me talk more about it. Because that movie, I don't know if it's great, but it's like, I appreciate it.
It's baffling, is what it is.
It's a big swing. It's weird. But yeah, he wasn't in that a ton, but he's having fun being
yeah.
the scummy guy. But
he's
yeah,
enjoying himself.
I like it when he gets to enjoy himself, and I think
it's always nice when an actor enjoys himself.
Yeah, and I think you know, despite this movie being you know like creepy, awful, scary, I think he was enjoying himself. Mm-hmm. Like you know, he's got his like little subtle comedy that I think
yeah.
is well utilized, especially when he's playing off Detective So and So. He's looking scared all the time, and he sucks. He's really good at playing someone who sucks, even though even Hawk doesn't suck. He's really good at, like, kind of being like, hey, I'm such a nice guy, but also my family has to live in a murder house.
Look, sacrifices have to be made for greatness.
Yeah, exactly. Those things gotta go down sometimes, you know? But in watching it this time, I noticed, like, there was some, a couple things that were kind of, like, I guess foreshadowed a little bit at the end when Vincent D'Onofrio, like I said, I just love cult and demon stuff in the modern age when it's like, yeah, whatever, ooh, this forgotten thing will get you. And I love that this is so obscure. But some things that happen, like, when you see the images at the end, he's like, this is all we could find. And one of them is of the scorpion. And you're like,
yeah. One of my favorite moments, really quickly, sidebar, is when he's up in the attic and he sees the scorpion and just immediately drops a box. Yes. I just fucking love
it's
that.
It's just like, boom, loud. I love that because you're like, oh, that's just like, okay, cool. Like, there's some danger here, but that clearly foreshadows, like, like, ooh, the Bagul. This scorpion was there. It's like all connected, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just, it's one of those movies that just, like, it hints at this big grand mythology that you only get to see parts of it.
It only dips its toe in,
And it's like, it's, I think Brandon Sanderson was talking about, like, when you are creating, like, a world, creating this big mythology, it's like painting, like, the mountains in the background. Okay. You're not painting every single detail of an entire landscape and all this stuff, because that's impossible. But if you give, like, the details of the background, it'll make it seem like it is a fully formed mountain range that actually exists back there. And I think this movie does a really good job of being like, oh, yeah, this goes back to the 60s, but, you know, Bagul has been around since who knows how many hundreds of years. And here's these little fragments we were able to find. And
here's this, like, drawing of what looks like a drowning, you know, in pyramid
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, and there's, you know, story reasons for that to be all of it. Because it's like, yeah, he lives in the images, which once again, thematically ties back to the thing. And it's like, oh, this is all we could get. And then we're just like, and I love how it's like, arguably, maybe not at the time, but like Vincent D'Onofrio. Like, him and Ethan Hawke are, like, the most famous people in this movie by, like, a wide margin.
Fair.
And, like, it's like, oh, who are we gonna get to be in these two Skype scenes where he's just gonna, like, just basically just be exposition? Yeah. And it's like, oh, let's get one of our greatest actors, Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah, no, he's great. I do, and I he gives very strong, like, I did not leave my house for this vibes, which I love, you know?
I love at the end he's just like, are you crazy? Like, what's happening right now?
Yeah, no, they're very well done scenes, and Vincent D'Onofrio sells it. Also, another scene I really like is the discussion about the squirrels with Deputy Stone. Yes.
So. Snakes don't have feet.
Yeah. Great line.
Honestly, so it's so good.
It is.
Yeah, and, you know, there's lots of great callbacks and, like, things like that in the movie. Like, I love that scene when you... Because, you know, it starts out with the... It's a lot of show, don't tell. And it obviously, like, it does tell you, like, this is the house they lived in. But the first time...
I like how it doesn't really tell you that until you see the tree.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. Yeah. Like, because you see that scene, it opens, and you're like, whoa, what is this murder? And then, then it tells you, like, oh, there was the murder, like, the girl is blah, blah. And then it just, like, he's just, like, sipping a cup of coffee, and he sees the tree, and you're like, you son of a fucking bitch.
Yeah. I really like that. And it hinted it beforehand when the sheriff's like, and I find this to be in bad taste, and point to the house.
And you're like, what does that mean?
And then it's like, oh, this guy's a dick.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
You'd also would have thought they would have removed that tree, but, you know.
Right, yeah. I was like, it's still there? Okay, okay.
I guess realtors and I make different life choices, right? Yeah.
Oh, man. But so I think, you know, like I said, this is, especially of this era, like, this is one of my absolute favorite horror films when, like, Insidious and all those movies were coming out. And, like, even Paranormal Activity, I didn't love, because that one felt, like, much more jump scary.
Yeah, but the interesting thing about the Paranormal Activity things is just how creative they are with, like, the camera work. Like, in the second or third one where they put that camera on a fan, and just the simple way that builds tension by moving back and forth across a room, because fuck that camera. Like, that's what I appreciate about those movies, just how creative they were, you know?
Yeah. And I will give them, like, credit to, like, the marketing, like...
Yeah, especially with that first one. That's how it made its money. Being like, this scared the shit out of these people in San Bernardino, you know? You want to be scared shitless?
Yeah, and honestly, I think that Paranormal Activity really changed, and, like, Paranormal Activity, and this is, like, in the direct result of it, kind of changed how a lot of companies make horror films. Blumhouse famously will just make a shit ton of horror films, and they're like, yeah, we made all these movies for a couple million bucks. Yep. One of them's gonna hit and, like, be our big success and make us $80 million, and that's going to cover, like, the 12 movies we made for $1 million, even if the other 11 fail.
It's a very much toss the peas at the wall and see what sticks sort of type.
Yeah. And then you get, and then, you know, from that, they'll every once in a while, they'll be like, okay, cool, this one stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and now we have like a big franchise,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's a, it, Paranormal Activity kind of changed the game when it came to horror movies just because it allowed a lot more of them to be made.
Yeah. And I think it is one of these genres, and it's something I've talked about on the show before, where it is a really good genre for like directors to get their feet wet, you know,
yeah.
Like it's because it's, a lot of times it's cheap to make.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to get like the biggest name actors, but like people will be willing to do it.
Yep.
And so it's a really good training ground. You see people like obviously Scott Derrickson,
mm-hmm.
Sam Raimi, both of the Doctor Strange directors, you know.
Steven Spielberg's first movie, Duel, is a horror movie with trucks, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, even like Peter Jackson, we've talked about on the show, like he came up doing all these like really cheap, bloody horror movies before he became the biggest director of all.
I've always been sad that Beautiful Creatures is or whatever, his one about the murders in New Zealand is not available to watch anywhere with Melanie Lynskey and Kate Winslet.
Okay.
I've always wanted to see it, but I just don't know how to find it.
That's something that pisses me off so much is that there are becoming less and less ways to watch movies, and physical media is becoming less available, and like there's things you said Beautiful Creatures. I would love to see that, too. Like, just straight up.
Heavenly Creatures. I don't know.
That's it. Heavenly Creatures.
Yeah,
Heavenly Creatures. Beautiful Creatures is, like, a YA book.
Right. That one is not great.
But, like, you know, something like The Baxter, you know, which is, like, one of my favorite. It's one I wanted to cover on this pod, but you can't even get it. You can't stream it. You can't rent it off Amazon. Or, like, how all these streaming services now are pulling things off of their sites. Like, Disney Plus and just Max now, I guess, are pulling a shit ton of things. Like there's that one Crater movie that was on Disney Plus that was like, it's about a bunch of kids on the moon or something. I don't know. But it was on Disney Plus it premiered in like May.
Mm-hmm.
And 7 weeks later, when they started purging everything, they took it off. And there's no DVD.
Yeah.
So if you didn't watch it in that little less than 2 months time, you're never going to see this movie. And you feel so bad for like all the creatives behind it, you know? And that's even if the movie comes out. Look at Batgirl, you know?
Right, yeah. That's probably never going to see the light of day. And it's ridiculous I guess I understand wanting a tax write-off, but at the same time, you know, we're missing out on Michael Keaton as Batman and Brendan Fraser as Firefly.
My God, that sounds so fucking good, you know? But hey, you know, we got Blue Beetle and The Flash.
And another season of that Sex and the City show.
And it's like, one thing, it's like, okay, it's like a movie from like 1914 that was destroyed in like a fire or something like that. It's like, okay, cool. But like, we have these movies. There's no reason we should not be able to watch them.
You just got to move it into the like from one file to another file.
Yes, exactly. Oh, man. Well, before we wrap up, any thoughts on Sinister? Last final thoughts?
Don't watch snuff films.
Okay, fair.
That seems to be like the main moral of this movie. Or move into murder houses, you know?
Yeah, don't move your family into a murder house, you know?
But I feel like that should be common sense, you know?
Yeah.
At the very least.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're a writer like myself who loves your work, like thinks that's your legacy or something like that, let that be your legacy. You don't have to have a family. Like, I'm sorry.
Oh my God, you're really coming out as anti-kid here.
No, if you want to, honestly, if you want to have a family and have kids and stuff like that, go for it. Like, that could be your legacy. Like, my mom, she is an incredible mom. She's put so much of her life into being a mom. Like, she loves it. But if you're like me and you're like, hey, I'm looking out for number one.
Oh, okay. You're like, I want to be famous and have that sweet, sweet sweater.
It
had patches on its sleeve, so I get it.
Yeah, right, exactly. He's got those professor sleeves, even though he didn't want to be a professor. But, I'm too selfish. I'm too selfish to have a family. Sorry, Mom. I know she thinks she's going to convince me at some point. But I think this is a great film that... It's one of those movies where I think people... And I've tried intentionally not to kind of disrespect the horror film, and I think that the term elevated horror is one I don't like to use because it implies that, like, a lot of horror is just kind of, like, baseline or, like, not great. But this feels like one of those films that would be, like, yeah, like, horror is a genre just like any other genre where you can write great characters, interesting backstory, have cool mythology, all that good stuff can exist in a horror movie, and it is no reason that, and it does in plenty of them, and this is a really good example of that.
Yeah. horror tends to be one of the genres that's so easily dismissed, so it's nice every once in a while when a very good one like this, or Hereditary, or Midsommar, or Talk to Me, and, you know, all those other ones come out, and people are like, you know what, maybe we should reevaluate horror and not dismiss it offhand.
Exactly, and maybe hopefully someday, you know, the Academy and all those people, you know...
Yeah, I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yeah, like, you know, maybe one day Toni Collette, for all of her horror work, can finally get a nomination. But, you know, fingers crossed.
Yeah, I hope the next movie she does is a lighthearted comedy.
she deserves a break.
Yeah. Same with Liam Cunningham. You know, I just saw Last Voyage of the Demeter. That guy, he needs a vacation.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah. That movie. Oh, man. By the way, people listening, I've hinted at that I'm going on vacation. By the time this is out, I will have been already gone on vacation. But... I did watch Last Voyage of the Demeter, and I'm going on a cruise, and I'm going to record a review of it on the cruise. So
there you go.
That feels like an appropriate place to do it. Yes, exactly.
Try not to get eaten by a Dracula.
The Last Voyage of the Carnival Panorama.
I swear to God, if that pulls into Long Beach and it's just a ship full of dead people, I don't know. I might say I told you so or something mean at your funeral, but, like, I'll be sad, so try not to die.
Okay, I appreciate that. Yeah. That's the mark of a true friend.
Right, someone who shows up and says, well, this fucking figure's at the funeral, and then, you know, it's just like, pour some out for you.
Thank you, yeah, that's all I can ask. Well, Marion, thank you for coming on. This is usually where I'd be like, hey, you want to, like, pitch or throw anything? But you're not even, like, on social media,
no.
So...
I don't exist.
Yeah.
I've been a figment of Derek's imagination the entire time.
Oh no, I'm in the horror movie. It was me, I was the murderer.
Whoa, wop wop.
But yeah, thank you for it's honestly been really nice to, like, you know, like, I love when I get to talk to my friends out there who have podcasts and stuff like that, but it's also nice to just talk to somebody about a movie and not be like, hey, what you've got coming up?
I have work tomorrow.
Yeah. But I do have things to pitch. I am a horrible person like that. No, not horrible. But,
You're not great.
Yeah. We'll see. I'm not even Hawk. But, yeah, check out... thank you guys for listening. Check out all the stuff. Head to underratedmoviepodcast.com for all of the links. The Patreon, which is our new Patreon. So we've got some new cool stuff. We're going to be... launching very soon a new podcast that is exclusive for patrons, talking about sports movies, called Underdogs. The first episode's going to be about Marion's favorite subject, a baseball movie.
Fuck that sport. No offense to people who like baseball. It's boring. And it can theoretically never end.
But baseball movies are always better than baseball.
Because they have an end time.
Yes, exactly. And then also check out the Instagram, all that other good stuff there. There's plenty on the website. Just go check it out. But until next time, guys, thank you all for listening.
Have a good one.